Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news that here. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. There's violence again in the Middle East. Surprise, there's violence almost every week in the Middle East. You can see it in Iraq with Shiites and Sunnis that are fighting each other. You can see it in northern Lebanon, where apparently Allah is going to defend the Palestinians in...
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush and Soviet President Vladimir Putin will meet in July. The meeting comes at a time when Soviet-American relations are said to be at their lowest point since the Soviet era. Yesterday, Russia test-fired an intercontinental ballistic missile with multiple warheads. Today, Putin warned that U.S. plans for an anti-missile shield would be a mistake. Officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are aggressively looking for passengers sitting near a man with a dangerous form of tuberculosis. The infected man traveled on several flights on Air France to multiple countries in Europe on or around May 12th. The patient is under quarantine at the CDC in Atlanta. President Bush will provide $30 billion for AIDS in Africa, which will double the funding. White House spokesman Tony Snow said Bush's recent announcements about sanctions against Darfur, the new president of the World Bank, and AIDS funding are taken in advance of next week's Group of Eight summit in Germany. Trade negotiator Robert Zelnick has been appointed by President Bush to replace former World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz, who was forced to resign over allegations of nepotism. His appointment must still be endorsed by the bank's 24-member board of directors. Six people are dead after 3 days and four nights of flooding in central Texas. At least three of the deaths occurred when people were trapped on flooded roads. Tropical Storm Barbara is the first tropical storm to kick off the season, which officially begins June 1st. Barbara is off the coast of Mexico and expected to make landfall in Acapulco in the next few days. Tropical Storm Alvin is first in the eastern Pacific. Alvin was downgraded recently. Iraqi forces announced they have arrested a suspected terrorist thought to be in charge of a cell specializing in kidnapping and assassinations. The arrest took place yesterday near Baghdad. The U.S.-led coalition today turned security responsibility for three Kurdish provinces over to Iraqi police and troops. Seven out of 18 Iraqi provinces are now in local control. Fighting broke out today, breaking an on-again, off-again truce between Lebanese troops and the Islamic militants holed up in a Palestinian refugee camp. An estimated 111 people have died in the violence between the two factions, and thousands more have fled the camp. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Delta and Dawn are missing, and biologists say that's a good sign. The two lost whales are presumed to be out in the Pacific Ocean following a misguided trip down the Sacramento River. Japan told delegates at the International Whaling Commission meeting the country will continue to hunt humpback whales, despite the majority of delegates voting against the plan. Japanese commercial fishermen catch approximately 1,000 whales each year. IBM laid off 1,500 people from its technology services unit. The downsizing follows a similar layoff at the beginning of May. That's more than 3,000 job cuts this quarter. IBM executives say they expect no more layoffs this quarter. Ford Motors announced it expects a sales increase in the U.S. for May, the first increase in 6 months. However, the automaker says overall revenues may continue to drop as sales to rental companies decline. Nigeria's new president has promised to put an end to the violence in the oil-rich Niger Delta, which has disrupted oil production in recent years. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $63.49 a barrel. The Dow Jones is up 111 points near the close of Wall Street. The NASDAQ up 18 and the S&P 500 is currently up 10. We have more news for you at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is a week in review, so all topics are valid, and I hope you'll call in to discuss a number of things going on. I got a lot on the agenda and only an hour to do it. First, I want to finish what I started yesterday. Many of you heard of the show where I debated someone who really does not want the state of Israel to exist at all, as he confided in me after the show. I've never quite understood that, why Israel should be denied the right to exist that all other nations enjoy. I want to play the rest of that debate that I had with him. That way you hear it in its entirety. If you missed the first 50 minutes or so, you're going to have to go back to the archive of yesterday's show. I'm going to play the end of that and discuss what it has to do with the recent war in Lebanon that is going on. Then I want to move on and talk about Monica Goodwin. I don't think she's gotten enough derision from me. It's very important to understand not just what she did, which is try to make all of our career government officials be Republican, but the harm it does to our country and why it is that Republicans appear to have no problem with this. It's very interesting. In fact, I'm going to be debating Mike Lane tomorrow right here on the Horn. Give you a chance to call in and challenge him. Many of you have said, hey, why is it when you debate Mike, this Republican, he says all these nasty things, I never get a chance to call in because, you know, you're doing it in a pre-recorded show. This will be your chance to call in and take him on about that. Then I want to talk about the 2008 elections and the candidates that aren't running. My own favorite, Al Gore, who I think I'm starting to pray every night, runs, and why I would like to see Al Gore's President of the United States, and then that empty suit Republican by the name of Fred Thompson, whose only presidential trait is the person he plays on TV. So a lot to talk about, but any issue you want to raise is fair. It's the Week in Review. Just give us a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON. First of all, I want to start by finishing what we started yesterday, finishing my debate with Josh Rubner, who is head of an organization to stop United States aid to Israel and to, in effect, support Hamas's suicide bombings. He actually thinks Israel should have no security wall and that people should be able to waltz in and commit terrorist acts. It's really a very surprising thing to say and a very hard thing to defend. But let me play for you the rest of this interview, and then I want to talk about the war in Lebanon. So first of all, finishing the last few minutes of yesterday. Brian Underville, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. I think you guys were on to something earlier when you said that it's probably going to take decades for a solution. And I think just the plain fact that here we are on an American talk show, and it's just like everyone's so emotional about the topic. Now, so I think the real thing I'd be interested in is where do you think we could be and like realistically strive to be in about 5 years, and how do you think we can get there?
I think that's a great question, and I think we'll probably answer it differently. I'll give my answer. I'll let Josh give his answer. In my view, the Palestinians have to come up with a leader, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, frankly, Muhammad, Mahbub Abbas, who is Abu Abbas, who's the leader of the what used to be the PLO, is actually, including Mohammed Dahlan, I actually think if he had the support of the Palestinian people and he could control his country, might be someone Israel could work with, and there could be a Palestinian state in more than 90% of the territories. We can argue whether it's 92 or 95. The problem is that he can't control his own country. He's having a civil war with Hamas right now, and at least in Gaza, Hamas has great support, and Hamas is dedicated to the destruction of Israel. And so until the Palestinians can control their own violent sects and truly support, a majority support a peaceful solution, I don't think there will be one. But I'll tell you this. The moment Israel believes that someone can deliver peace, they will take it. They return the Sinai, which is three times the size of Israel, to Egypt. They're willing to return the Golan Heights. They made peace with Jordan. They returned Lebanon. They returned Gaza. Israel wants to give up the land, but will only do so if people stop shooting across it. Josh.
Well, if you think back to a few years ago during the annual Herzliya conference on defense and foreign policy and so forth, Ariel Sharon gave a very interesting speech there. And he said that we need to end our military occupation. And there was a huge uproar in Israeli society. And a couple days later, he clarified that statement. And this is very important. He clarified the statement. He said, what I meant to say was that we should end our occupation of the people and not the land, and that we should keep control of the land. And this has always, in essence, in different variations and different permutations, has always been the essence of what Israel has offered the Palestinians: a Bantustan-style state, a non-sovereign, non-independent state, as our caller mentioned before, without sovereignty over land, without sovereignty over the resources underneath the land, without sovereignty over the air, without control of borders, without control of foreign policy. This is not a state. What Israel offered at Camp David was roughly equivalent to what black South Africans had under apartheid in the Bantustan system. It was both 12% of their historic homeland.
Let's go to the computer if we can, because I want to show what was offered at Camp David.
And what
It's right here. Let's show it up on the computer. This, by the way, is a map from the Palestinians, from Orient House. This is from the PLO. And they can see, you can see, there's all of Gaza right here, all of Gaza, and contiguous West Bank land. It's all contiguous. It is 97% of the West Bank. Bill Clinton has clarified this was the map. Dennis Ross has clarified there was the map. There were no Bantustans. So
right.
Let's get past this. This is disinformation, Josh.
But what that
you
map,
shouldn't be saying this.
But what that map doesn't show is the fact that Israel would have retained military access over the Jordan Valley, separating the West Bank from Jordan.
15% of it, to be exact.
And what it doesn't show is that East Jerusalem is completely surrounded and cut off from the rest of the West Bank by that huge block of Israeli settlements, which under this plan would be annexed to Israel in defiance of international law. Now, the caller asked about what we should be talking about here in the United States, which I think is very relevant, because to be quite honest, I don't think we have a right to tell Israelis and Palestinians how they should work out their conflict. As long as it's based on human rights and international law and equality, I don't care what the solution is. That's for the people who have to live with those consequences to decide. But we have a U.S. policy that's very, very detrimental to the cause of promoting peace. You have a policy that gives Israel's military occupation billions of dollars every year to maintain and expand its control of occupied Palestinian territories. Now, what we should be concerned as citizens in the United States...
They expand, except that, of course, they're reducing it from...
Israel's expanding settlements in the occupied territories all the time. But the pertinent thing, as U.S. citizens, I believe, is to look at the actions of our government and to hold our government accountable to its own laws. Now, the U.S. Arms Export Control Act says...
You only have about 30 seconds.
I'll be quick then. The U.S. Arms Export Control Act says no aid can go to a country that commits violations of human rights and that kills innocent civilians. Israel does that with U.S. aid. We need to stop it, and I urge everyone to come down to the Capitol Sunday, June 10th, for a big national protest against 40 years of Israeli occupation.
Israel has not violated the law. It has not been illegal. It is a small state trying to survive against hundreds of millions of Arabs who are seeking to massacre all the Jews. We need to support a democratic Israel. Thank you very much. Join the Inside Scoop next week.
Okay, that was it for the end of yesterday's show. And you can see why he was a difficult person to debate. He would throw out things and then keep filibustering. I mean, very, very clever tactics. He would say, you know, defiance of international law. Well, that's just false, actually. There is no international law that says what Israel's done is illegal. What it is disputed land. And we talked about this, and you can go all the way back to the League of Nations mandate and the Balfour Declaration, which showed that actually a Jewish state was supposed to be on what is today Israel, the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights and Jordan. Now, I'm not saying that's what it should be, but that's what international law was in the 1920s. Or you can go back to 1937 when the Jews were willing to take a very small territory, about one-fifth the size of Rhode Island, not much bigger than the city of Providence, in fact, if only they could have some state where 6 million Holocaust refugees could go. and the Arabs refused to allow them even that tiny piece of territory. So it's a dispute, obviously, and there's two people disputing. And what I've argued all along is that as soon as the Arabs stop trying to destroy the state of Israel, accept that it exists, they can have a state of their own. The Israelis are ready to give the Arabs a state of their own. They've been voting that time and time again, as long as they seek peace. But they are not seeking peace. In fact, Hamas, to this day, to this moment, is continually shooting missiles into Israeli cities. And when that happens, it's my view that a government has to defend itself. We'll talk a bit more about that after the break. If you want to call in and talk about this or any other issues, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, kids. You know, there have been a few questions about who is this guy starting a gay conversation radio show on the Head On Radio Network? And what color is the sky in his world? Not to worry, I totally get it.
Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Hi, this is Sarah Jessica Parker. It's hard to believe that 1.5 million people in New York City are at risk of going hungry. More than half of them are children and the elderly. The Food Bank for New York City provides the food that soup kitchens, food pantries, and shelters use to feed those in need. Now more than ever, we need your help in the fight against hunger. For more information, visit the Food Bank at www.foodbanknyc.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I want to finish up my discussion of really the state of Israel. It's very interesting to me when people say, you know, there shouldn't be a Jewish state. And I guess to understand it, it's very hard for people to understand that, for example, there were more Jews alive in 1939 than today. Every other people has managed to recoup their losses after World War II. There are many more Americans than there were after World War II, many more Russians, many more Poles, many more Arabs. There were only 18 million Jews in the world in 1939 and only 14 million alive today because, of course, one out of every three Jewish man, woman, and child was slaughtered. Now, some argue that Jews don't need a state. That is an argument that was made throughout Jewish history, in fact. Last time the Jews had a state before Israel, of course, was the time of the Maccabees. It was about 2,000 years ago. And, of course, the Jews have lived in, really up until 1948, in a period of absolute, wretchedness. People don't even realize that in the United States, for example, in the 1940s, more people would have supported a campaign against the Jews than would have opposed it. It's shocking, but if you look at the Gallup polls from 1941, 1940, 1943, 44, and 45, Americans believed Jews were a greater threat to America than Germany or Japan. I realize that's very strange coming to our ears now, because obviously Jewish Americans do very well today. But it's simply a fact, and people don't realize how much support there was for the Holocaust. Most Europeans, many Americans, there was a lot of support for it. So the question is, really, you have two people in the land, but the Arabs, of course, have land that is more than twice the size of the United States, and the Jews have land that's about the size of New Jersey. And the question is, should you split up the remaining part, you know, New Jersey, to give to a people that already has many, many states? In Jordan, there's a Palestinian state, and should they have yet another state? And my answer is yes. Give them a 24th state. I don't think they really need one. I admit that. The Kurds need a state. They're being persecuted, no question about it. Another Arab state in the region? Fine with me, as long as they stop killing. And the point that people don't really understand is that, of course, the West Bank and Gaza was controlled by the Arabs. They could have made a state then. They didn't. They started shooting. And even when Israel leaves Gaza, what do? They don't make peace. They immediately set up shop and start shooting. Everything Israel has done throughout its history has been in self-defense. And I am not one of those that says that someone who intentionally kills and someone who tries to fight back in self-defense and accidentally kills are the same people. I will never suggest that because when we shot back at German soldiers, we may have killed a few civilians, that somehow we are equivalent to the Nazis and their death camps. I don't think it's the same thing. Not at all. I think there's a difference between intentionally targeting civilians and intentionally targeting people targeting civilians. If the police, shoot at Waco, and try to stop killing there, and they kill some children, that's very different from what David Koresh does. But what bothers me, I guess, about all this discussion is the rhetoric. When you had someone like my guest talk about Bantustan states, now, he's trying to use the language of South Africa, obviously, to attack Israel. And yet, I show him the map, and the map shows that Israel offered a contiguous state. And then he says, well, Jerusalem was entirely surrounded. Well, the map, and this is a PLO map, by the way, a Palestinian map, shows that simply wasn't true. And he says, well, Israel will still have, you know, part of the Jordan River, these early warning stations. Well, France, actually, after World War I, got to have early warning stations in the Rhineland. And when they gave it up, they were attacked. What's interesting is when Israel gave back the Sinai to Egypt and the Golan Heights to Syria, in fact, at parts of 73, they established a treaty that said that no one, Egypt couldn't go in parts of the Sinai, their own territory, and Israel couldn't go in parts along the border too. Separating the armies makes good neighbors. What the Palestinians want is not a state. Let's be clear. They want a better way to attack Israel. Otherwise, they wouldn't mind ruling everything themselves, but simply not having a massive army. Instead, they very much want the army, and they very much want to attack. So I don't think there's an easy solution, but what I don't like, I guess, is people who misstate the facts. And again, unless you think Bill Clinton is lying and Dennis Ross, the peace negotiator, is lying, Israel offered 92, 95, 90, up to 97%, and Arafat refused to offer a single concession. A single concession. And when you don't offer a single concession, then you're not going to get anywhere. And the real people who suffer, of course, is the Palestinian people. Now, here we have in Lebanon, Palestinians suffering again. Why? Well, there's a refugee camp in Lebanon. Unlike Israel, which has taken in all the hundreds of thousands of Jewish refugees kicked out of Arab countries, more Jews have been kicked out of Arab countries than the largest estimate of Palestinian Arabs to leave Israel, by the way, 800,000 Jews. Israel's taken them all in and become citizens. No Arab state except Jordan allows the Palestinians to become citizens. Every single refugee camp was built by Arab states. And in Lebanon, there is a refugee camp right now in northern Lebanon. And in there is a Syrian-controlled terrorist group named Fatah al-Islam that's been robbing banks in Tripoli, shooting into shopping malls, bombing a resort area, and so forth. Now, Lebanon's got a difficult decision. What do they do? Do they, as those who attack Israel would suggest, do they simply allow the bombings to occur? Do they allow their citizens to die? Do they allow the bank robberies to occur? Those that would argue, including my guest, that Israel should simply allow Hamas to shoot missiles into its towns, and if they kill people, they kill people. Don't fight back. Turn the other cheek. In effect, what my guest argued yesterday was lay your borders open and let them march in and invade. You don't need an army. I disagree. I think that Lebanon is fighting back. Maybe they're fighting back too brutally. In fact, more Palestinians have died due to the Lebanese army in the past week than have died in all of Gaza in last 07. So Lebanon in 1 week is fighting harder than Israel has done all of this year. But what's really going on there? Is it because the Palestinians want a state in Lebanon? I don't think so. I think what's really going on is that Syria is about to be tried. And I got to give credit to the United Nations, which occasionally does the right thing. The United Nations Security Council is pursuing the investigation into Syria's assassination of the Lebanese prime minister. Of course, Syria was occupied Lebanon for about 30 years. No one seemed to complain about that except the Lebanese, and no one really cared much about them, until they went one step too far and assassinated former Prime Minister Rafiq al-Hariri. Well, the United Nations, the United States, Britain, and France want to investigate who killed Hariri. All signs are it was the Syrian government, and they're saying, okay, you want to investigate whether we did this, which is something that could actually harm Assad's dictatorial government. We're going to try to burn Beirut. We're going to make things as difficult as possible for you. The last time they tried this, there were bombs on buses, and Cabinet Minister Pierre Gemayel was killed the same day the Security Council first approved plans for this tribunal. So Syria is making clear, and they're using in fact, this guy, the head of the Fatah Islamic group, was a Palestinian terrorist who was imprisoned in Syria for only 3 years. And then let go. Is he a Syrian agent? Well, look at it this way. The last time terrorists attacked, or call them terrorists, whatever they were, someone attacked the Syrian government. I don't know if they were terrorists or not, given that the Syrian government is certainly not a legitimate government. Syria went into its fourth largest city, named Hama, and massacred every person in it. They killed some 20 to 30,000 people. The rest ran, and then they leveled the city to the ground. No one complained at that time. The United Nations, other Arab countries never complain when Arabs kill Arabs, just like you don't hear my guest. I tried several times to see if he would condemn the Lebanese army for attacking this refugee camp far worse than Israel ever did, not allowing any food or any water in to 40,000 civilians, but he wouldn't condemn the Lebanese government for attacking the Palestinians, which tells you something very clear. People who advocate for Palestinian Arabs almost never care about Palestinian Arabs. If they did, they would condemn Lebanon for these actions. They would condemn Saudi Arabia for discriminating against Palestinians. They would condemn every Arab state, because every Arab state, with the exception of Jordan, discriminates against Palestinian Arabs. They never do, because they are not pro-Palestinian. What they are is anti-Israel. And that's a very important distinction. If people truly cared, you would see these same people marching against genocide in Sudan. You would see them condemning where they think Israel has gone over, but also condemning the much more harsh treatment that Arabs do to Arabs. You don't see that. So I think there's a big difference between Israelis in a democracy saying that this should be done or that should be done, and really a lot of Europeans, a lot of Americans, who seem to actively support Hamas, actively support the destruction of the state of Israel. And I don't think any state will accept its own destruction, and neither should Israel. If you want to call in and discuss this, the toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N. If not, I'm going to move on and switch tactics completely and talk about Monica Goodling. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just to finish my earlier topic, I was thinking during break, no one in history has ever tried to eliminate the French people, to say that the French people should not exist, that all French people should be murdered, men, women, and children, and yet no one questions the right of France to exist. In the United States, we took a Native American land with literally dozens, if not hundreds, of functioning tribes and peoples took their land, actively took their land, massacred the inhabitants, and yet no one questions the American right to exist. In Australia, they conquered the Aborigines, cruelly mistreating them. No one questions Australia's right to exist. Poland didn't exist for hundreds of years. At the time of World War I, back when Israel didn't exist, Poland didn't exist. Neither did Czechoslovakia, neither did Hungary, neither did Austria. None of these countries existed, and yet were created because the peoples were there. They had belonged to ancient countries, and they were all decided that they should have a right to a state. No one today, even though Poland controls much of what used to be Eastern Germany, all the way to the Oder-Neisse line, that was all Germany, And literally, millions of Volksdeutsch had to move from Poland to Germany. No one questions whether Poland is occupying German territory. Now, some say, well, okay, well, Germany attacked Poland. Poland had the right to attack back in self-defense. But that's all that Israel's done. Just because Germany began the war, should Poland be able to have the eastern third of Germany? Well, I say yes. I say that's why France gets Alsace-Lorraine. They were attacked by Germany. They get to conquer. You know, whether we get California, New Mexico, I don't know. But it's amazing that these rules seem to only be applied to the state of Israel. And it's also interesting to me that if someone really cared about the Palestinian Arabs, who are definitely not living well, particularly in Gaza, they would say, just once, try peace. Just once, try nonviolence. Stop bombing Israeli cities. And yet, what did the Hamas leader say yesterday? After they sent literally hundreds and thousands of missiles into Israeli cities, including the town, the hometown of the defense minister, killing a 35-year-old woman. Finally, Israel attacks back and very carefully targets and kills five terrorists. When I say terrorists, I don't mean children. I mean the people who are shooting the missiles. It's very hard to do that, by the way. Very hard to attack and only kill those five. They did, and then Hamas leader Khaled Mishal hailed it as, quote, an historic opportunity. Not the airstrikes into Israel, but the fact that Israel fought back. He said that because Israel fought back, he is going to lead it into a bloody new war. But what should Israel do? What would the United States do if we had missiles raining on us from Mexico or Canada, for that matter? Would we do nothing, as people who support the Palestinians advocate? Or would we fight back? I would venture that Israel, it doesn't have an easy answer. May even have to reoccupy Gaza. But the sad lesson that Israel has learned is that every time it gives the Palestinian Arabs territory of their own, they don't use it to build schools. They don't use it to build sewers. They don't use it to build industry. They use it for one purpose only, and that is to take their own children and sacrifice their lives in order to try to kill Jews, in order to try to kill Israelis. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a conflict that may go on for decades, perhaps even hundreds of years. But it won't end until the Arabs recognize that Israel exists. It's been around for 60 years. It ain't going anywhere. And you know what the irony is, having just gotten back from Israel? The territories, at least the West Bank, Gaza's very crowded, I understand that, but the West Bank is more than half empty. You heard Josh talk about, Sharon says he doesn't want Israel ruling over Arab people, but doesn't mind ruling over land. That's correct. Israel doesn't want to rule over the Arab people, the Arab cities, whether it be Ramallah or Qalqiya or any of those cities. But there is empty land out there, and that remains for negotiation. More than 50% of the West Bank is empty. That's what the fight is over. And the Palestinian Arabs are more than willing to see their own children die rather than give up 1 or 2% of empty land. Not good. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. I'm going to move on to another issue of the week. I want to talk about Monica Goodling, because I think she's gotten a pass. And yet what she says is not disputed. There is no dispute that she and others throughout the Bush government regularly hired career prosecutors and other people in the government based on their political party. Monica Goodling would actually look up and see where they gave donations. It's funny, I've got a friend who's been looking for a government job, has had a lot of trouble, and he told me he thinks the reason why is because he gave a $200 donation once to a Democratic candidate. Now, this friend works in computers. He has absolutely no political power over anyone. But the government is violating the law, which says you can't take political partisanship in position for non-political positions in the government. Now, you know, you could have a different law. You could say, as they used to in Andrew Jackson's day, to the victor belongs the spoils, throw out all the secretaries, throw out all the librarians, throw out all the computer technicians, you know, throw out all the janitors to make sure that you have a Republican janitor rather than a Democratic janitor. That's going to be hard to find. I've never heard of a Republican janitor, but, well, I don't know. Maybe a slave. Who knows what a Republican janitor would be? The point is that Goodling regularly would see who someone was, see what their political views were, would say this person's too liberal, this person is a Democrat, this person contributed to a Democrat. She made these decisions. Now, who is she? She's a graduate of Regent University Law School. As I've mentioned before, out of 143 law schools ranked by the U.S. News and World Report, she went to number 143, the last one, the worst ranked one. Now, you know, I admit I'm being a little snooty because I went to the first ranked one, but she went to the last ranked one, and less than 3 years after graduating, she's in charge of the 93 senior U.S. prosecutors across the nation. Okay? So you have people that have, you know, seasoned prosecutors, federal prosecutors, that have done this for dozens of years, and their boss is the U.S. attorney. And his boss is 33-year-old Monica Goodling. And I don't mean to attack her for her youth. If you're 33 years old and brilliant, fine. But she goes to the worst university in the country, a university that, in fact, is more concerned about religion than it is about the law. Goodling very clearly said, quote, "All I ever wanted to do was serve this president, this administration, this department." But did she ever care about serving her country when she was put in this newly created office? But she's not an exception. That's what's so fascinating about Monica Goodling. She is the rule. All you have to do is look at Mike, "You're doing a heck of a job, Brown," our famous Arabian horse trader in charge of emergency management, who displaced James Lee Witt, who had 30 years of emergency management under his belt. Or look at someone like Harriet Myers, who apparently helped George Bush in a zoning dispute, and therefore he felt she could be Supreme Court Justice. And yet, who's in charge here? Well, Goodling says it's the Deputy Attorney General, and the Deputy Attorney General says it's Kyle Sampson, and Kyle Sampson says it's Goodling. Gonzalez says, "I have no idea what was going on." And they all say that each other is lying. Goodling says, in fact, that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who testified before Congress, that he didn't talk to anybody. He testified before Congress that he had not discussed the details of the firings with any potential witnesses, quote, "in order to preserve the integrity of ongoing investigations." And yet, what did Monica say? Well, Gonzalez laid out for me his general recollection of some of the process of the firings and asked me if I agreed. Can anyone say woodshedding the witness? Now, Gonzalez hasn't denied that he did this. Well, then he clearly lied to Congress. Why aren't we hearing Republicans talk about prosecutions of perjury here? After all, if they think it's important enough when a guy cheats on his wife with a different Monica to impeach a president, how about when Attorney General of the United States gives a bold-faced lie to Congress? Does that matter? You know, I did a show a couple weeks ago. You can still get it online at RadioInsideScoop.com, where I featured James Comey's testimony, the former Deputy Attorney General under Ashcroft. And I played his entire 20 minutes testimony, interspersed with discussion of my own. You really should check it out. And what James Comey said is very interesting. He said, "We can't have a department that is decided based on politics." Quote, "If that is going on, that strikes at the core of what the Department of Justice is," unquote. The Department of Justice decides who gets prosecuted. They decide who goes to jail. And if you're going to have a president of the United States deciding who goes to jail based on political reasons, then I suggest to you that we are no different from Mexico or the Soviet Union or any other dictatorship in the country. And all the evidence points back to voting. If prosecutors allowed African Americans to vote, they were kicked out. But if they brought trumped up charges against people registering blacks, well, then they were allowed to stay. So it all comes down to racism. It all comes down to civil rights. And when you watch Monica Goodling or Alberto Gonzalez, don't be fooled about what's going on here. They're asking for nothing less than a repeal of the 15th Amendment that gave blacks the right to vote. They're doing it in a very sneaky way, but that's at the heart of what the prosecution scandal is all about. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-4HEADON. Feel free to call in if you like on any issue. We'll be right back after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
The Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Baeres. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In talking about Monica Goodling, the devil really is in the details. And I want to give you a lot of the details because I think many of us know the overall arching nature of the story. But the details, I guess, I don't know. They hurt and they amuse at the same time because they show really how amazing this administration is in throwing away democracy and trying to take over. Totally not caring about the law one way or the other. When Monica Goodling was asked, okay, whether what she did was legal, let me read this to you. She says, quote, I may have... I can't do a Monica Goodling accent. I'll try, but it'll be bad. I may have gone too far and asked... I'll leave the impressions to Bob. But I may have gone too far, she says, in asking political questions of applicants for career positions. I may have taken inappropriate political considerations into account on some occasions, says the woman who had to plead the fifth and get immunity before she'd even testify. Was that legal? Asked Bobby Scott of Virginia. Not a difficult question. There are only three words in it. Was that legal? She wrings her hands, she rubs her bracelets, she draws a breath. She says, quote, I know I crossed the line. Bobby Scott says, what line? She says, I know what I did was inappropriate. He says, because it was illegal. And she said, I know I broke the rules. And Bobby Scott said, the rules that are the law. Now, look, she knows she broke the law. Now, she's already said, I broke the law. Why the heck is she pleading the fifth? Why not just admit it? But that's not the interesting thing, that some 33-year-old graduate of the worst law school in the country, which is more concerned about knowing your Bible than knowing the law, that she actively broke the law. That's not the interesting thing, in my view. What's interesting is listen to the Republicans respond. I mean, you have to understand, throughout the Justice Department, everyone had a Monica problem. If you did not say you voted for Bush, if you didn't give donations to Bush, if you didn't plead Heil Bush, you were thrown out or you weren't hired for a job. That's a serious problem. As she describes the Justice Department becoming a subsidiary of the Republican National Committee. And what did Republicans say in response to all of this? Well, let's see. We've got Representative Chris Cannon. He read a lengthy editorial condemning Jack Martha. Okay. Then we have Representative Dan Lundgren, who gave a 250-word speech praising his service as his state's attorney general. Okay. Who else do we have here? Let's see. We've got Tom Feeney. Remember Tom Feeney? The guy who Chris Curtis tried to unseat, the guy that, Clint Curtis, I should say, the guy that set up a Florida voting program to make sure that blacks couldn't vote, he said, quote, millions of Americans now know a lot more about you, and they're proud to have someone like you serving in government, unquote. Feeney is proud that she was willing to break the law of the United States, break criminal law, in order to take a non-politicized department like the Justice Department and make it Republican. Tom Feeney is proud of you because Tom Feeney hates his country and cares more about the Republican Party than he does about his country. Well, you know, James Comey had an answer for this. James Comey, who is a Republican but puts his country ahead of his party, said if people believed that prosecutors across this nation were chosen only based on their political content, juries across America would start voting to acquit. Start voting to acquit. Jury nullification. If I had a federal prosecutor try to put someone away for political reasons, say they were trying to put away someone for vote fraud, and that person was not chosen based on merit, but solely based on the fact that they were willing to trump up frivolous cases in order to try to keep blacks from voting. Well, it's easy to, on the jury, all you have to do, of course, is to claim that you're unbiased and then vote to acquit. Right? After all, if the Justice Department isn't about justice, if it's about political payback, the American people should have no part of it. Even James Comey said that that is likely to happen. So who's Monica Goodling? Well, they asked her, less than three years out of law school, in charge of all the nation's prosecutors, what was her experience? What qualified her for her senior job? Well, she wasn't in the top 10% of her class, but she was student body president at Regents College. Student body president. I guess that's good enough. Look, what's really going on here, I think we all know. Karl Rove decided what was going on. Karl Rove decided who would be fired. Karl Rove decided that he was going to keep blacks from voting by hook or by crook, and no one would have ever discovered this if it hadn't been for one decent, honorable person, U.S. Attorney Chuck Rosenberg of Alexandria, who found out that Monica was not allowing liberals right and left to work for the department, was in fact firing prosecutors for not being sufficiently Republican. And he asked the Department Inspector General to look into the allegations, and now we know what's going on. Nice to know there are some honorable people. Meanwhile, the Deputy Attorney General McNulty bars her from attending a closed-door Senate hearing when this first started happening, because he thought that if she were there, people might question whether the White House was involved. Well, now we know the White House was involved. Democrats asked her, how many times did she illegally look at whether people gave donations or who they voted for, or looked at people's political persuasions when deciding who to hire for non-political positions? She said she couldn't tell whether she did it more or less than 50 times. And yet Congressman Steve King of Iowa says there's no evidence of wrongdoing. Congressman King, she admitted to breaking the law. She said, I broke the law. In fact, I won't even testify because if I do, you'll put me in prison unless you give me immunity. I broke the law. And I did it in a regular basis. And all my bosses approved of it. And I did it more than 50 times, and it's rampant, and it's all going on there, and everybody's doing it. And Congressman King says, quote, there's not only no evidence of wrongdoing, there's no allegation of any wrongdoing on your part. Now here's the question. Here's the question. Does Congressman King believe his own words? What do you think? Do you think Congressman King actually believes there's no evidence of wrongdoing? Or is he just saying this to try to persuade us who haven't looked at all the details, like I have, but some Americans who haven't, oh, I'll just say there's nothing there. I mean, when George Bush was asked, did you send Alberto Gonzalez into the room to try to trick a man on drugs after serious gallbladder surgery, John Ashcroft, did you send him in the room to trick him into breaking the law that everyone agreed was against the law about spying on Americans. And what did the president say? I refuse to answer the question. I refuse to answer the question. I will not tell you whether I sent my henchmen in to break the law knowing it was illegal, doing an explicitly illegal act. I'm not going to tell you. It's none of your business. If I, the president, want to break the law, you Americans need to shut up and accept it. Or as Richard Nixon once put it, if the president orders something, it's never against the law. And that is the heart of the difference between the Bushies and everybody else. The Bushies believe the president is above the law. He has no legal constraints. And that's why it may take impeachment proceedings, at least of Attorney General Gonzalez, in order to get to the truth of this matter. And look, I have no problem with impeaching him. I'd like to see people vote against impeaching him, frankly. This is an administration that has so little concern for the law. Joe Wilson, in fact, is suing, you may know, for outing his wife, Valerie Plame, a treasonous act, outing a CIA agent. And the president's men made the argument that whether or not the president or the vice president tells lies to the press or the truth, whether or not they commit treason or not is irrelevant. It's a policy discussion. It's perfectly fine for the president or the vice president to commit treason. If they do it, it's not against the law. Someone needs to tell that to ex-vice president Aaron Burr, our last vice president convicted of treason. And let me just say this before I close, and I don't have much time to talk about this topic. Fred Thompson's thinking of running. He's an empty suit. He's an idiot. He's perfect for the Republicans. I want to talk just in the last few seconds I have about Al Gore, whose book, The Assault on Reason, is just coming out. You got to read this book, folks. Al Gore says everything about the Bush administration that everyone else is afraid to say. This man would make the greatest president of the United States, and all I can do is beg him, day by day, and hope you'll do the same, run, Al, run, because it will take decades to get out from what under this administration has done. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow I debate Republican Mike Lane, and you can join in the debate and ask him the hard questions. I'm going to be asking him about Monica Goodling. I want you to, too. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. Stocks rallied today with the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 closing at all-time highs and the NASDAQ at a new six-year high. We'll have the numbers coming up in our business segment. Officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are aggressively looking for passengers sitting near a man with a dangerous form of tuberculosis. The infected man traveled on several flights on Air France to multiple countries in Europe on or around May 12th. The patient is under quarantine at the CDC in Atlanta. President Bush and Soviet President Vladimir Putin will meet in July. The meeting comes at a time when Soviet-American relations are said to be at their lowest point since the Soviet era. Yesterday, Russia test-fired an intercontinental ballistic missile with multiple warheads. Today, Putin warned that U.S. plans for an anti-missile shield would be a mistake. President Bush will provide $30 billion for AIDS in Africa, which will double the funding. White House spokesman Tony Snow said, Bush's recent announcement about sanctions against Darfur, the new president of the World Bank, and AIDS funding are taken in advance of next week's Group of Eight summit in Germany. Trade negotiator Robert Zelnick has been appointed by the president to replace former World Bank president Paul Wolfowitz, who was forced to resign over allegations of nepotism. His appointment must still be endorsed by the bank's 24-member board of directors. Former Tennessee senator and Law and Order actor Fred Thompson is moving toward a presidential bid. The 64-year-old has a conservative record in the Senate, and recent polls show he would fare well against the other candidates. In London, British negotiators meet today to work out a strategy to win the release of five British civilians who were seized yesterday in Iraq.